Welcome to That 80s Show, and we're going to do something very experimental. Experimental AF. Podcast live medical check.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't involve me grabbing my scrotum and coughing.
I hope it doesn't involve me grabbing your scrotum.
This is the problem, Dory. I'm not prepared for something funny, and now we're grabbing scrotes.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a very good look in light of the podcast industry in South Africa this week.
Not even 10 seconds in and we're talking about balls.
Man, come on. But listen, check your balls. It is responsible, you know.
Yes. I'm going to go get my boobs checked today.
You got to.
It's happening today.
We're at the age.
You're gonna be squished between the machine.
I believe that hurts like shit.
Actually, the people I go to, it doesn't hurt that much.
Oh, gentle
touch. They're very good.
Ooh, a touch of a criminal. So you got to. I mean, we're at that age where you got
to
go have things squeezed, fingers in, and you know?
Yep.
Probably what got you in the position in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Get in the position. Assume the position. Welcome to That 80s Show.
Not for kids.
No, yeah, you should know about that. But listen, no kid will want to listen to this.
No.
There's nothing for kids in this. And now we are definitely going for checks. We're going for checkups. And it should involve a full mental audit. I'm Paolo. This is Dory. This is That 80s Show. And we're going to take a little trip around the 1980s of our minds. It's always the 80s. Up in here, it's always Club Tropicana and smells of dirty...
Brut.
Brute, as the more intelligent may say. So what you're talking about, Willis, has taken on a very, very different and menacing meaning. Lately, a few weeks ago, we spoke about Gary Coleman's wife.
Widow.
She, failed a lie detector test. Like we all know, lie detectors, quicksand, so afraid of them in the 80s. In the principal's office, we're very afraid of those. Do you think kids are as afraid of principals now as they were back then?
I don't think so, because mostly corporal punishment isn't a thing anymore.
It's gone, right?
They're not allowed to. Some schools still do.
Really?
Ooh, yes.
What schools are these?
Oh, the ones on the DL.
Oh, the DL schools.
DL.
Oh, yeah. No, because like we were super scared of teachers. I don't think my daughter gives... like two hoots, any kids. I don't care about principals, principal's office.
Kids at my kids' school, they don't care. Oh. They swear, they do whatever they want.
Go to the principal's office. Awesome. He'll like have a, are you having a mental health moment? Do you need a hug? You know, do you need, go stroke the puppies that we have for you, precious little children. Not us. Buck. For the boys, you know who I've had it best.
Ses van die beste.
Sure. You know, I think I got plenty of those. Our good friend, Noel Opperman.
I think so.
Yo, I think he was in that principal. I think he basically had a desk in there. And he was just getting six
Or he was the goody two shoes.
Yeah.
Apple for the teacher.
The counter. Now.
We're going to have to get him on the show and find out.
We've got to get him on the show soon. That is a good friend
Noel,
of ours.
Noel, this is another open invitation.
He wants to. I tell him, literally, Noel, we have 45 minutes a week to record the show. That's what we have.
Take it or leave it.
Anyway, so what you're talking about, Willis, of course, we talk about the fantastic TV show from the 80s, Different Strokes, Gary Coleman and his brother, played by Todd Bridges. And he was a titular Willis in what you're talking about, Willis. And they were two brothers adopted by a rich white family. Very funny premise back in the 80s. But Todd Bridges, who was the older brother, who was Willis, this week spoke about how he's involved in a physical altercation with co-star Gary Coleman. Now, that's not, pick on someone your own size.
Ooh.
Comes to mind. You know what I mean?
Mm.
You know what I mean? So apparently at 13 years old, now, it doesn't say who was 13, whether it was Gary Coleman or Todd Bridges. I assume Todd Bridges.
Yeah.
Gary Coleman slapped him. Slapped him, of course, which Bridges goes, fuck that shit.
How did he reach? Wait, where did he slap him?
Yeah. Doesn't say. I'm going to leave that there, right?
Okay.
So Gary Coleman slaps Willis. What you talking about? Slap the taste out your mouth. He's like, Willis is like, fuck this shit. who knows what he did with Gary Coleman? Not said here in that in this article. And now people aren't going to take that lying down. You know, Gary Coleman, believe it or not, he wasn't lying down. He was actually standing. Maybe he's on a lower step. I'm a short man. I'm a short king. I can say that. I am a short king. It wasn't a, it wasn't like a, he was just short.
Yes.
Gary Coleman, right?
I think so.
I'm a short king. I can make short jokes. Of course, Gary Coleman's father gets involved and says, you got to fire Todd Bridges, no more Willis. Bridges recalls, Gary's father tried to have me fired because at 13 years old, Gary slapped me and I slapped him back and he was like, we've got to fire him.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think Gary Coleman was a bit of a douche.
I think you get to that point where the whole show is about you.
Yeah.
You're on t-shirts, you're on lunchboxes, they're making cartoons about you. You're slapping Willis, you know?
And sounds like an Urban Dictionary term.
Yeah. No. And if you don't slap your Willis at least once a day, what are you talking about actually? You know, so of course, as we know, they did not fire him. How would they have? Oh, you see, I just realized slapping your Willis in different strokes, so ooh, much potential there that I just left on the table. Maturity, growing up.
Right.
Okay. How would they have explained where Willis went if they did get rid of him?
Boarding school.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Because that's what they did with most of
Done, Dory, because they can't kill him. That's dark.
No.
Sent away to boarding school because drugs.
Or he got a bursary to go somewhere fancy. Switzerland.
I think in the spirit of the 80s, like kind of the heavy anti-drug message, they would have said, no, Willis, he's been
hanging around the wrong sort of kids on the wrong side of the tracks.
Hitting that crack pipe, and now he's at, you know, divine intervention school for boys.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's where he would have ended up.
Man, we could write an 80s sitcom.
I mean, I would totally watch that. I'm getting some AI to write that shit for me right now. Mm. Bridges, of course, has been, never had great success afterwards, been in things and all his like his, that's the guy, was it the little guy who wasn't the
littlest guy.
He wasn't the littlest guy because there was still a little guy more little in him, Emmanuel Lewis.
Yes.
But he was that guy. And so that's kind of a Todd Bridges, kind of, you know. And he's become an advocate for drug awareness, which would have been ironic if they made his character use drugs. And then he's also worked to shed light on the struggles faced by former child stars. He was in a documentary. It's a documentary on Disney Plus about child stars. He often pops up in these things of going like the abuse of the era. Mm. And we don't want to get dark about it because we never talk about serious stuff on the show.
And we'll have to talk about know who.
So, and he talks a lot about certain Corys of the time.
Yes.
You know, Corys and Dorys. And so what this got me thinking about, you know, dad's intervening, Mr. Drummond, whatnot, it got me thinking about 80s TV show dads, right? And Dory, I'm going to do like a little bit of an evaluation for you.
Ooh.
I'm going to give you some 80s TV show dads, and we're going to kind of come to the conclusion who, maybe we want the same 80s show dad, which means that you and I are then 80s sitcom siblings in like a very like yours, mine, and ours type of thing, you know?
Okay.
Or maybe we have different 80s TV show dads and then we can be neighbors.
Okay.
Okay. So first 80s sitcom dad is Danny Tanner from Full House, right? I'll give you pros and cons.
Okay.
Played by Bob Saget. Now, very tidy. Had a bit of a media persona. He was a weatherman. So
I've forgotten that.
You're going to get tickets for stuff. You live in San Francisco. Mm. You live in one of the, what do they call them? The Grey Ladies?
Yeah.
Those like houses in San Francisco?
Yeah.
I think it's called the Grey Ladies. So you're going to get some tickets to some stuff, right? You're going to get access. Not like full-on news anchor access. A weatherman after all. But you're going to get at least some tickets.
Do you think you would have been bullied because maybe the weatherman got it wrong and then the kids come up to you and go, your dad said it was going to rain and it didn't rain, and then they beat you up.
I think that's the thing. San Francisco, very, you know, I think you're going to have quite a moderate climate. You're never going to have a snow day in San Francisco.
Probably not.
Probably rain, hot rain. Yeah, that's true. You could have that. So that goes into the con. I think him being very tidy is a bit of both.
Yeah.
Because it could be too much. Like, hey, I'm just a kid. I get it. I want to be neat, but shit sakes.
Like, let me play.
Yeah. So, king of dad jokes. Now, at the time, I hated them. as I become a dad, as I'm getting to that, I'm in that age, I appreciate them. So that's Danny Tanner from Full House. Right, yeah. Let's go. Next two are very interchangeable. Stephen Keaton from Family Ties and Jason Seaver from Growing Pains. The two sitcoms that I always get confused. Family Ties and Growing Pains. Okay, so let's go Stephen Keaton, right?
Yeah.
Played by Michael Gross. Very open-minded, liberal, ex-hippie. Really had deep conversations about everything, right? Pro. Con, he's going to not want to do any of the consumerism and capitalism shit.
Yeah, he's going to say, you don't need those sneakers.
Exactly. You don't need them. Mm. You don't need that Nintendo.
Yeah.
Right? Jason Seaver, played by Alan Thicke. Cool, stay-at-home dad. Well, he worked from home dad. He was a psychologist.
Oh, I'd forgotten that.
He was a psychologist. But again, psychologist as a parent, he's going to use his tricks on you.
None of these are appealing to me so far.
Good head of hair.
Yeah.
So if you're looking genetically. Okay. So Dory, so far, not loving the dads.
No.
Cliff Huxtable.
Oh my God.
What? Pro, fun, doctor, loves music. An example for people.
In the 80s, I would have said. Yes.
Con, he's Bill Cosby.
Right.
Okay.
Big con, kind of overshadows all the pros.
Literal con, an ex-con. Literally. An ex-con at the moment. Now I think we're going to start getting into some that we like. Fred Sanford from Sanford. Yes, Sanford. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, played by Red Fox.
Yeah.
I mean, funny guy.
Grumpy.
Grumpy, but like scathing, but like really in a fun way, real tough love type of thing.
Yeah. I like. So far, my fave.
On the con side, super sarcastic, always feigning death. That's not really a con. Always feigning death. You know, very overdramatic. Lillian, here I come, Lillian. You live in a junkyard.
Yeah.
Okay. Tony Michelli.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
Who's the Boss?
Not terrible.
Cooks, cleans, protective, athlete, good looking, looks great in a t-shirt, great head of hair.
You know the problem as a girl having that dad?
No.
You don't know if your friends are your friends or if they're trying to come and see your dad. Because he's hot dad. He's DILF.
That's what I'm saying. And boys wouldn't like come because the second he's showing up in the door, guns, tattoos, you know. Yeah.
That's the problem.
Boys are going to be like, ah, shit. I mean, although you're Alyssa Milano, so... Fuck it. I'll take my chances.
I know you would.
So, okay, Tony Danza, here's mine. I don't want to influence you. Al Bundy.
Big surprise.
From Married with Children, played by Ed O'Neill. Pros, right? Super funny. Low standard, low bar. Because he peaked in high school.
Yes.
All you have to do, because there's a lot of other fathers here, especially like... Alan Thicke and even Bill, you know, Cliff Huxtable, Jason Seaver, Stephen Keaton, they're all achievers.
Yeah.
So you have to be like, you know, Michael J. Fox, what is his character in Family Ties?
Alex
Keaton. You have to like kind of be future president to, you know, where Al Bundy, you just have to like kind of get a college degree and you've, you know, so standard super low. He's not going to expect the world of you unless you, you know, if you got to be a star of the football team. Score four touchdowns in one half for poke high. You got to do that. And he's going to step up for you, Al Bundy. I mean, Al Bundy, put upon by his family, gave his family shit, but the amount of episodes where Al Bundy gets fucked up because people like step to the Bundys or he fucks people up.
Yeah, that's true.
You got to like that.
That is true.
Con, I don't see many cons. The man went to work every day, put his family in quite a big house.
Handed them like money whenever they
all
asked.
The time, you know, just wanted to stick his hand down his pants, watch some TV, do some checks. I don't see many a con with Al Bundy. So.
It's quite grumpy, but manageably grumpy.
And it's funny grumpy. Yeah. It's like it all is a joke. Like he's always looking for the joke, right? I mean, man went to work all day, woman's shoes, putting them on. Come on. Works in the mall. Again, he'll know people in the mall. Maybe can get you movie tickets. So presented with all the evidence, Dory, who is your 80s sitcom dad?
Sure. You make a good argument for Al Bundy. You really do.
I'm telling you. So listen, we didn't like Danny Tanner. Stephen Keaton.
No.
We don't like Jason Siva and Cliff Huxtable. We cannot like him.
We cannot. If it had been the 80s, maybe, I would have probably chosen him.
I think
he was so funny.
I think you're going with Cliff Huxtable. So, Tony Michelli. Fred Sanford's out. I don't want to live in a junkyard. He's a bit dramatic.
Okay. Okay.
We're between Tony Michelli and Al Bundy.
Yeah. Mm. I think I'm going to choose Tony because I like that house more.
Not your house, though.
I know.
Okay, well, that's your dad. You can, you know, it's a redo. You choose your dad.
Yeah, why not?
Dori Michelli, welcome to the family. Paolo Bundy, here I am. Okay, I'm all for it. So that's 80.
So we're neighbors.
So we are. Well, I live in a shitty neighborhood. I don't think I live in a shitty neighborhood. That was a pretty, because the neighbors were rich. Mm. So you obviously didn't live in a shitty neighborhood.
No.
The Bundys. But yeah, you are definitely upper crust.
Okay, but maybe we go to the same school.
Are you Alyssa Milano or are you Sam Michelli or are you Dori Michelli?
I mean, I could be Alyssa Milano.
Oh, I see now. You see, because if you're Dori Michelli, then we're friends.
Yes.
Because I think Dori Michelli and Paolo Bundy are closer to each other.
Yes.
I think if you're Sam Michelli, you are a cheerleader.
I can't relate to me.
and my ways.
No, I can't relate to being Sam Michelli.
Again, another fucking great sitcom. What are we doing?
These things
here?
Are just writing themselves.
What are we doing here? 17 minutes in and have we written better sitcoms? So what we like to do every week on that 80 show is go to the video stores of our minds. Are we doing a movie recommendation this week, Dori? You did.
I am.
Got a great movie.
I am.
Hey, listen. People, have you got any feedback about Shifty Records, the podcast?
I have. It's amazing the amount of people who've contacted me and said, oh my God, I didn't know this podcast was a thing. I'm so excited. I even had someone call me last night and say, I can't find it. Please send me a link.
Influencer.
So, yeah.
Influencer, Dori.
Damn it.
Do we have to start like putting paid sponsor on our post? No.
No.
Only when we get paid. Influencers, you and I.
We are Shifty is a friend of the show.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
You know who's also a friend of the show?
So many people.
Rands. Good friends of the show. I would like some of them. Like more. All right, Dori. So what is your recommendation?
So Paolo, we often speak about AI on this show.
And we even spoke about it before AI was AI. We, you know, Skynet.
Yeah.
Johnny Five.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it.
Right.
Right. Warning about it.
I went onto Plex last night looking for something to watch. I thought I'll find something ridiculous and terrible. I found something pretty good that while not the first movie to, in inverted commas, predict the AI future.
Ooh.
Definitely is in the running of a movie where you're going to look at it and go, wow, this movie was so ahead of its time and saw things. But then you got to think, did it see things or did it create things? Because a lot of technology came from what people saw in sci-fi movies.
We had
this discussion.
We've spoken about it because it goes, well, yeah, I mean, sci-fi came up with ideas. We just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And then over the years.
And then when we could do it, we did it.
But you've looked at it and go, oh.
Yeah.
You know what they haven't done? Hoverboards.
I know.
But let's just leave that.
One day.
Yeah, one day.
In 1968, there was a movie called 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yes.
Which, very, very famous movie.
Now.
Cult classic.
Now, people may not know Plex, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you something right now. A movie like 2001, A Space Odyssey, not on Plex.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
Plex is a free streaming platform. Not with movies like that.
No, but you know what the funny thing is? So I went on to Plex and I went movies and I chose comedy.
Yes.
And then I'm looking for something from the 80s.
Yeah.
There are movies from 1925.
There are. Do you ever like just kind of watch some of them?
No.
I do.
Okay.
No.
But
that's 100 years old.
1925.
100 years old.
1930 something. 1940 something. 1950 something. 60, 70. Hardly anything from the 80s. Hardly anything. Then you start getting into the 90s and the 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually pretty challenging to find movies from the 80s on there. I don't know why.
I can't find ones I haven't watched.
Yes, no. Look, a lot of them we've already spoken about. You specifically have spoken about on this show. But I was very pleasantly surprised to find this movie. And I have seen it in my youth, but I haven't seen it since my youth.
Okay.
So when I rewatched it last night, it was like watching it for the first time. I didn't remember any of it.
Good stuff.
I'm going to show you the poster and see if you can predict, if you can remember what it is.
The poster I'm looking at is on That 80s Show essay right now and in our show notes. It is a poster for, I know that little fucking computer. Yes, it is a little computer with a sad face. Should I say the name? Now, Dory, I have reviewed this movie.
Have you?
A long time ago.
Yo, that must have been on our list.
Way back, I did review it way back in our radio format Tapa days.
Oh my goodness. Well, it wasn't on our very incomplete list.
Songs from the movies.
Oh, songs from the movies.
That was our theme. Okay. I did it then. But yes, it's fine, Dory.
It's fine because that was so long ago. Yes. I don't even remember. The movie's Electric Dreams.
Great movie. Great song.
Great song.
Great song.
Yeah. In fact, the soundtrack in general for this movie is pretty good.
I remember that because it's Giorgio Moroder.
Well,
Moroder?
Yes. A lot of it is him, but there's also some songs by Culture Club, which you and I have probably, I mean, I had forgotten.
Mm.
And funnily enough, the songs that the computer makes are sung by Boy George. So the computer's voice is Boy George, which is kind of funny.
Yes.
If you don't remember, this is a movie from 1984. And it's essentially about a very disorganized architect who is not coping at work, and someone suggests that he get something to help organize his life, and he goes to the shop, and of course the idea is get a computer, it'll help you organize your life. Very typical 80s trope, something goes wrong, the computer gets...
Is it struck by lightning or electrical surge or water?
Not water. Champagne gets spilt on, because what happens is, and this is what's so funny, he hacks into his boss's computer and tries to download everything from there. And the system overloads and the computer starts sparking. So he's drinking champagne. So he pours some champagne on it to stop the smoking, and it somehow brings the computer to life. And then the computer is sentient. Things that are like really bizarre and ahead of its time in this movie. As soon as he sets the computer up, before this whole sentient thing happens, it immediately says, connect me to your appliances and I can control them for you.
Plug
me into your kettle, I'll make you coffee.
I was setting up my daughter's Google Nest the other day and she's like, can I get some of the Wi-Fi light bulbs? And we're trying to connect it to stuff in our house, the TV in her room. Oh my God.
Dude, this is 1984 and he made a smart home. He connected the computer to his door for security he could get in and out with like a certain password.
Came true.
Yeah. The kettle came true. He could also coffee. It controlled the lights.
Came true.
Controlled the shower.
I'm sure.
Yeah, well, control the water. He had to turn that one off because that one was not working so good.
You control the geyser.
Yeah, exactly.
Came true.
Basically controlled the whole place.
Fantastic.
Managed the computer, connected itself to the TV, to the phone, to the stereo. The stereo.
Come on.
That's what it was.
It's amazing. Was it one of those with the little glass cabinet that went clink?
No. But it did have the big knobs.
Yes.
Yeah, you know.
Again, check them out. Be responsible.
Check your knobs. Similar to what happens in the movie Splash, the computer ingests everything through the TV so that it learns, it teaches itself. Sound familiar?
Doesn't it watch an A-Team?
No.
It watches one, or Magnum.
A lot of old black and white movies in this movie. It's a very sweet story. He has an upstairs neighbor who's just moved in, played by the gorgeous Virginia Madsen.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to watch. He's kind of nerdy, awkward. There is a guy, so the upstairs neighbor's a cellist in the orchestra, and there's another guy who's in the orchestra with her who's like trying to, you know, flirt with her. And that guy, you'll know him, because I looked at his face and I was like, I know this guy. Why do I know this guy? He played the lead in Grease 2.
Oh,
I know.
Yes.
Completely forgettable, though.
No, because that was the one with Michelle Pfeiffer in the Olivia Newton-John role. Yes.
But what you'll really remember him from, if you've watched the 90s movie Empire Records, he played Rex Manning.
Yes, but yes, I know. Yeah. Yes,
so you know he's like a good-looking guy,
typical American jock,
yeah,
1950s.
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously you think the girl's going to go for him. No, she goes for the awkward, nerdy guy. I love it.
But,
I love it.
But in it though, the you missed out. The computer falls in love with him.
Oh, the computer totally falls in love with her, and she falls with
her,
in.
Yes, for yes, because the computer has a male voice.
Yes,
and then falls in love with her. That's the yes.
In fact, the man, the actor who voiced the computer, Bud Cort.
Yes,
famous for his role in Harold and Maude, a very famous movie. I read some really interesting things about when they did the production of this movie. They needed for people to not see the computer as a human. So when Bud Cort was there and had to record the voice, they actually put him in like a booth so that the other actors didn't see him.
Oh, that's cool. That's clever.
So they kept him away. So he said for him, the experience of making the movie was quite lonely. He never got to see the other cast members. But what a personality. I mean, you know Bud Cort. I promise you, he's been in so much stuff. If you look up a picture of him, you know exactly who he is. Here's the really interesting part, Paula, that you will appreciate. The director of this movie was, before making Electric Dreams, pretty much only known for doing music videos. He did Take On Me.
Yes. And I know that.
You know that, right?
Yes. Okay. Because even the music video for Electric Dreams, the song.
Yes.
He directed that as well.
Yes. So a lot of this movie feels like an extended music video.
Yeah.
A lot of it. I don't have a problem with this. I quite enjoyed it. There's a really funny part where while the guy's at work, the computer has hooked in to the TV show and the phone. So it's phoning a radio show for advice and it calls Dr. Ruth.
Wow, that is an 80s throwback.
So much, so much. So it literally calls Dr. Ruth for advice because it's in love with this woman. But it can't even touch her because it doesn't have arms.
Wow, that's deep.
And then Dr. Ruth says, do you have anything you can touch her with?
Got a floppy.
That would have been such a good answer.
You know what was in there. It had to get cut for ratings.
There is definitely some, look, the computer does go a little bit crazy as these things happen. In fact, there's a really great article. I'll put it on our Facebook page, a Substack article called How a Little Scene 1984 Comedy Predicted Our Imminent Artificial Intelligence Created Dystopia.
I would argue on that because—
No, absolutely.
Not Little Scene.
It didn't do very well at all.
The box office story, but on video?
Yeah, no, I think most—
Yes.
Yeah, it probably did eventually have a bit of a following. It's a very interesting article. It is a little bit melodramatic.
Ugh.
That being said, there
probably
is one line—
Written by Gen Z.
There is one line that I've thought of this too. AI is learning from everything that we've put out into the world. Articles, movies, everything, right? We have put out all these things about AI taking over and destroying the human race. So that's what it's learning. It's learning that that's what it has to do. And so there's a line in this article that says, have we sealed our own death by AI doom just by imagining it?
Wow.
I'm going to leave you with that thought.
That's way deeper than I wanted to go when we're busy talking about so many of my favorite things. Take On Me.
I know. Anyway,
I'm glad you didn't start with
it. Some food for thought, you know? But yeah, Electric Dreams, it's available to watch on Plex for free.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Doesn't he unplug at the end to defeat it? He just unplugs it and we feel sad?
No, he unplugs it.
Or he unplugs it, doesn't go off.
It doesn't go off. It's still
that's
alive.
That's what happens, yes.
It's alive. And
Johnny
then I'll tell you, it does, it is sad in the end because, I'll tell you, spoiler alert, the computer realizes it will never be able to experience love.
Oh,
so it figures out a way to
blue screens itself.
It destroys itself. It figures out a way to destroy itself. But, and I won't give this away entirely, doesn't completely destroy itself. It pitches up right at the end.
Because another spoiler, in credit, there's like a little dude and it comes back on screen again and starts typing, isn't it?
No.
But this computer does come back on.
No.
How does no one's going to watch it, Dari.
Oh, fine. So the computer's gone. Him and the girl are together. They're going on a holiday. They're driving in the car. And all of a sudden on the radio, they hear the computer's voice and they hear a song. that the computer has obviously made because it's Boy George singing.
So great.
And basically the song
plays. Do you really want to hurt me?
The song plays everywhere. It takes over all the radio stations. It's playing everywhere. Yes,
good. Dystopian. So
it lives. I want to see. It lives in the airwaves.
I want to see Electric Dreams too.
Yeah.
The Awakening. Now we're writing movies. Now we are writing movies.
Damn.
God damn, today, fan fiction deluxe on that 80 show. Mm. So I'm actually glad you brought up that we are putting out shit onto AI.
Yeah.
We're teaching it stuff. I have a movie so obscure that not the AIs could find me enough about it until I started giving it stuff to go look for. Right? So basically, if you one day in your mind want to find out about this particular movie, it's going to reference this very podcast at this very moment.
Oh, wow.
To get the information.
You're now writing future
now
media.
We're writing, we are dictating and misinforming so many people at such a fucking biological level. Okay, it is a movie called The Barbarians. Right?
Okay.
Now, going to the source and with sorcery and sandals, sword and sorcery movies, everybody wanted to make their own version of Conan the Barbarian. My favorite production studio ever, Canon Films, goes, fucking hell, we're going to make it a movie called The Barbarians.
Okay.
Dory, more oil than plot this movie.
Okay. More, oh.
And it falls into one of my favorite genres of movies as I go through scenes and talk to some scenes about you. I can't believe it's not porn.
Right.
Right?
Okay. It's
not porn. Not porn at all. So much porn. In fact, being in this movie, I think your parents would be proud of you if you did porn.
Oh.
Yeah. Because at least then you're in a different genre instead of this one. So it's two brothers, right? Two actual brothers, twin brothers, Peter and David Paul. And they are like...
They have three first names?
Not... Peter Paul and David Paul.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's all first names.
All first names. Oh, I didn't see that. I was like looking for the Jake Paul and Logan Paul thing there. They are stereotypical kind of guys that you would have found in the 80s. Real lanky muscle heads. They typical look like condoms stuffed with walnuts.
Okay.
Lubed up. Cannot act. But here's their big break in this movie, right?
Wow.
And get cast as two brothers. So that we go, we're in like some world, a variation of our earth. And these two brothers belong to this traveling circus of carnies, a traveling circus of entertainers. And for some reason, the princess of the carnies is on this, you know, little caravan with them. And they get attacked and they get kidnapped by these, you know, this rogue force who's running this world. And they separate the brothers, right? Ooh. And we then appear 20 years later or so, 10, 15, yeah, about 15 years later. And the brothers, and there's these two warriors, they're gladiator types. They've been raised in different camps to be fighting machines. And they put to battle each other. Their masks come off and they go, holy shit, we're brothers. You're my brother, I'm your brother.
Mm.
Let's kill everybody, chop someone's arm off in the first case of someone having a charm or their kind of arm region removed by sword.
Okay.
And they escape. And now they're like, we have to find our people. We have to find our princess so that we can restore peace to this land. Okay. And that
So she wasn't kidnapped. Just the two of them were kidnapped.
No, everyone was kidnapped.
Oh, okay.
Oh, because the princess now is held by a guy called, what was his name? The bad guy. Kadar. He's the bad guy. And he talks like that. Kadar. Okay. And he's the guy who has the harem. And every time we go to the harem, I cannot believe it's not porn. Because you're watching this thing, no woman is wearing like any clothes.
Huh.
Very little. There is a threat of nudity at every single point, and he's now holding the sorceress. All right.
Okay.
She's got a ruby in her belly button.
Okay.
Okay. And as long as the ruby's in her belly button, she cannot be defeated. So they have to get the ruby out of her belly button. And
okay.
Once, yeah. Okay. So that's, they got it. Or they make her do things, Dory. But things that just stop it, just like if this was another movie, that would happen.
Right.
It's this movie. So that doesn't happen.
Okay.
So this is just all a quest. The only actor of any note that they meet in this movie is Eva LaRue. Now, she, our good friend, the celeb savant, Barrett will know her. She's a soapy actress. She's been in All My Children and those ones. She was okay. in CSI Miami. She's the only actress that went on to do this. This was her first role. Beautiful. She's the only one who went on to do anything from this movie. And she now, quite sassy, quite, you know, spunky. And now she joins them on their quest because she's also being held captive. They got to go. They got to go find Kedar. They invade the harem. Now, the two brothers who play this part are such bad actors. They literally do not talk in this movie, right? They grunt. They grunt all the time.
Yeah.
They do say things every now and again. Sounds like grunting. May as well just have grunted. There is another sorceress, such a bad actress, that they dubbed her entire voice afterwards. And not well, Dari. Not well. The criteria for casting this movie, you know, in the 80s, we now got the gym craze, we've got the beach craze, we've got the everyone good looking craze. They just basically went around, you and you and you and you and you, kind of like casting for body beat. You and you and you and you and you, right, in this movie. We can't
act. No auditions necessary.
Irrelevant, rub this oil on yourself, put on a loincloth. Okay, that was the criteria for this movie. Kedar gets his finger chopped off.
Okay.
Fuck. As the brothers escape. So now they're trying to run away from Kedar. The ruby falls out the prince's belly button. Oh no, there's no sorceress. The ruby turns to stone. They find the traveling troupe that they were with who've been hiding in the woods, the people that they used to travel, the entertainers.
Mm.
And now they're like, well, now we don't have a princess. This stone can only turn back into a ruby if it's put in the belly button of a virgin, right?
Right.
And if it becomes a ruby again, she's our ruler.
Oh.
Now.
There's only one other woman here.
Dari, why is it a woman? We don't know what those two brothers have been doing.
Oh.
No, that'll be a plot twist. No, it is another woman. So basically they call forth all the virgins from the village, put the rubies in there. Doesn't fit. No, there's two things here. Either they're not virgins.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I kind of went, and they go, oh no, why would it fall out my belly button? I'm a virgin. I'm not. No, bullshit. You are definitely not a virgin, you.
Yeah.
And anyway, eventually it fits the belly button of the character played by Eva LaRue.
Well, who didn't see that coming?
And then they all reveal, hold on a second. We've known each other for half a movie. Do you also have a tattoo on your neck? They all pull back their hair. They've all got tattoos on their necks. They're siblings.
Oh.
They're siblings because there was a little girl in the beginning as well, and she's their sister. They're all reunited.
Thank goodness they didn't do things.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Dari. Thank fuck for that.
Yeah.
Again, I can't believe it's not porn.
Right.
Confrontation with Kedar. He surrounds him. He's about to kill them because he's got a crossbow. Can't shoot it. He doesn't have a finger.
He's got other fingers.
Well, don't worry. At this point, they chop him. Kedar's dead. Ruby in. She's the princess. Everyone lives happily ever after and lubes themselves till the end of time.
God, it sounds horrendous.
Oh, it's so bad.
Horrendous.
Oh, it is very, very bad. It is very bad.
What year was it?
1987. So late enough to know better.
Yeah.
Canon Films wanted to make it a series.
Wow.
An entire franchise. They did do others. But again, Canon Films knew. You put a movie in the cinemas, only certain amounts of people are going to do it. Not everyone can go hire Top Gun every single weekend.
Yep.
And once you've seen Top Gun, maybe watch it twice. You got to hire other shit.
This is for the people who get to the video store late.
That's the thing. And more people are going to get to the video store late than early.
Mm.
And that's where people watch shit like this. And then it goes viral. You take it to a friend tells a friend, a friend tells a friend. You can't believe
and
it's not
be
porn.
Honest. Yeah, people watched it because of the boobs.
You know, the greatest invention.
Pause button.
Exactly. You know me, Dari.
I know
you
so
me.
Well.
Very, very well. So I just want to end up off with a story about Jason Bateman.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, Dari, he got fired for being too successful, for being too popular. Can you believe that?
I can, actually.
No. You got to fire David Bateman, Jason Bateman. fuck David Bateman, dickhead. Obviously, he was in Silver Spoons, his first role.
Yeah.
I don't think his first. I think it's Little House on the Prairie.
Yes.
Yes. And he played Ricky Schroeder's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what happens? The mothers are hanging around backstage, not encouraging their sons, forcing their sons to compete because Jason Bateman's becoming more popular than Ricky Schroeder.
Yeah.
Right? And it starts a battle and a war between the mothers. Guess who won? Won the battle.
Yes.
Jason Bateman gets fired off Silver Spoons.
Huh.
And, oh, you won that battle. But who wins the war, Dori?
J-Bay wins the war.
J-Bay, because...
Because where's Ricky Schroeder now?
Have we seen him in Ozark?
Have we seen... Does he have a podcast?
Have we seen him on Arrested Development?
No.
You know? I'm pretty sure there were Ricky Schroeder jokes on Arrested Development. Had to have been. So, just remember that.
Yeah.
You may lose today. You may get fired today.
One day you'll be J-Bay.
I mean... What a note to end on. Dori,
mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Paolo.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.